Welcome back to Gesundheit with Jacobus, Health Talk Radio. Now, your host, Jacobus Hollewein.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to that third hour. And I really appreciate all of you. Maybe you just tuned in right now. Maybe you've been listening the full 3 hours. I very much appreciate you. Of course, those who listen for the full 3 hours, I appreciate a little bit more. So just that you know, no, just kidding. Thank you so much for tuning in. What a special day it is. It is July 20th, 2019. It is exactly 50 years ago that man landed on the moon, a very special moment. And there are some things that we can talk about that's kind of fun and special. One thing I was watching around midnight, I was watching some documentaries, for interviews with Neil Armstrong. And I remember myself, I'm 59 right now, so I was about 9, and we were on vacation in the Netherlands, and we did something, my parents did something, and you may have that over here too, it's kind of exchanging of homes. So there was a family somewhere else in the country, and they wanted to live for a few weeks, 3 weeks or so, in our house, and then we moved into their house, and so nobody spent any money. We pretty much exchanged houses for a few weeks, and anyway, I remember that my sister woke me up, and I forgot what time it was. Maybe it was around 11 at night or maybe 1 in the morning. Who knows? And she said, and my sister was 3 years older than me, and she said, man landed on the moon. They landed on the moon. And I look out the window, and I look at if I could see it. You know, that's funny. What do you know? And I wasn't following, the whole story. But when you were a little bit older, people were just glued to the TV. Now, there is some really interesting stuff that is to know. And I went on the Dutch news, and they're talking about all the people who have been to the moon. And I thought, you know, what have they done since? And I was watching last night an interview on 60 Minutes with Neil Armstrong. He was a very private man who just didn't give any interviews. And he was really a humble man. They also said, you know, you're really a hero. And he said, you know, he said there was 140,000 people who have worked on this whole project to get us to the moon. And he said, so I am nothing special. I just happen to be the first one coming down the ladder. And he said, and that's what he asked them. They said, why did you say it's one small step for men, but a giant leap for mankind? What made you say that? And he said, well, I realized that it was really just a very small step for me to get off the ladder and just land on the moon, step on the moon, but as a giant leap for mankind. He said, I was thinking about those 140,000 people who have worked so hard, some of them have lost their life, to get to the point where they were able to land on the moon. So you look at all the space travel, all the rockets that have been produced, and all the people who have been working behind the scenes to get all this done. He said it is phenomenal, and I felt it was really what mankind has been able to produce in only 8 years' time after John F. Kennedy asked this country to put somebody on the moon. That, he said, is totally impressive. Now, he himself left NASA in 1971. So this was in 1969. He left NASA in 1991. That he had said, I don't want to go into space anymore. Instead, he became a teacher, a professor in engineering, I think, in the University of Cincinnati. He was also on the committee at NASA that was doing the research on the accidents that had happened with Apollo 13 and the Space Shuttle Challenger. About his moon flight, I'm translating this quickly from Dutch. He said about the travel to the moon, Neil Armstrong said, "We were so busy trying to make the mission a success, then we were not worrying about the historic impact of being the first people landing on the moon." He said, "We were just, there were so many things we had to check all the time. And, you know, you shoot up there with a rocket and you're going with so much speed. There is only so much time you have." And the other thing he was talking about, if for those of you, and I'm sure many of you remember that whole landing, he actually didn't take the route they had told him to take. And they asked him what would happen, because when he landed, they only had about 40, they had very little fuel left in the lunar module. And they said, you know, when you follow that, it still gives me the chills when I hear the communication between Houston and the lunar module, the LEM, the Eagle, that they're going like, you only have 60 seconds of fuel left. You only have 30 seconds of fuel left. And he was still not on the ground. And it was unbelievable. But what he said, when they had all the coordinates figured out, when he got to the moon, he was actually going to land on the edge of a crater. And he said that crater was about as big as a football stadium. And he said, and the sides were covered with big rocks. He said, there was no way I could land the module right there, because we probably wouldn't get away, or would damage the module. And that whole module, by the way, for the, you know, you look at the pictures, that thing was literally made of aluminum foil and a whole lot of tape. That's what they said, a whole lot of duct tape and other stuff. That thing was literally like a Coke can that was just landing on the moon. It was very light. And those guys were trying to get out of there as quickly as possible, because the way that this unit was made. And it had to be very light. And so he said, I had to land it, and we had to figure the space. And Neil Armstrong, one of the reasons why he was picked as the commander of the whole Apollo 11 was because he was a cool and collected guy who never stressed about anything. He was not scared of anything. It was not that he was a tough guy in other ways. It was just that everything he did very thorough and calculated, but therefore, with all the prep that he did, he didn't have that anxiety that some people would have under this kind of pressure. I mean, if you hear Houston tell you only got 30 seconds of fuel left, you know, then you better land that thing. And so they just had enough fuel to get back off the ground, off the moon surface, and just shoot themselves into speed. And just to think about when you release back from the moon, that you somehow are able to coordinate with your speed back with the Apollo 11 itself, with the capsule that Michael Collins was flying, that they were able to coordinate that somehow in that space. It simply is masterful. It is amazing that people were able to do that. So as far as Buzz Aldrin was concerned, Buzz, his real name is Edwin Aldrin, but he had Buzz as a surname. And apparently his year and a half older sister, Faye, was not able to say brother to him. She would say buzzer to him. So she had a speech impediment, or she didn't know how to say it. So instead of saying my brother, it was my buzzer. And so that's why it was abbreviated as Buzz. After Apollo 11, for a short time, he went into the Air Force, American Air Force, but he retired from that in 1972. There was a period in which he struggled with depression and alcoholism. His therapist suggested that he do something completely different, so he became a car salesman. After an arrest because of disorderly conduct, he finally stopped completely with drinking. Aldrin became a fighter for space travel to Mars. In 2002, He was one more time, he made the news. I'm just trying to translate here. He, in 2002, he again came in the news because he hit a man who complained, who claimed that all the moon landings were fake and that it was just one big conspiracy. So he got really upset about it. And personally, I think that is absolutely impossible that it is a fake. And I'll tell you why. If you think how many people were in the Houston Control Center, you cannot tell me that all these people were able to stay silent for the rest of their lives, that nobody would leak out information and say, you know, this was the biggest crock. We were sitting in somebody's garage and we were just making all these pictures and noises and it never happened. So that is interesting. Anyway, so that is what I wanted to say about it. And that is over here. There is something that talks about different facts that you may not know about the lunar landing. And I thought, oh boy, why is it so difficult to find this? Let's see what we can find. Well, you know what? I'm going to get my caller on. Good morning, caller. Thanks for joining the program today. What is your name? How can we help you, please?
This is Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Now that you mentioned, and now people know officially that you were from the Netherlands, I want to tell you something that happened in the afternoon in the White House on Thursday.
Yeah.
The greatest patriotic speech that I heard about our flag was from a fellow from the Netherlands with the prime minister standing there and, of course, Trump and all the other people.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk to you about a five-minute speech. The people from the Netherlands, this flag was bought by an individual,
yeah,
of course, from the Netherlands. He bought the flag years ago. It was one of the ships that landed on Normandy.
It was the original flag.
The original flag of this ship.
Yes.
He bought it. It's all shredded and everything. But he encased it and kept it. And so for the anniversary of Normandy, he made a request and the prime minister, and they came to the White House. But the speech he gave is how much the people, let's say in Holland, Netherlands,
yeah,
you know, the people there,
yeah,
respect our flag and are more patriotic than some of the Americans that every time are saying bad things of what veterans gave their life to do. This man, in a five-minute speech, nobody could believe what he said. So I want to let you know that the people from your land appreciate, and they don't live here,
yeah,
our flag, yeah, more than some Americans that I know. That's what I want to tell you.
You know, that's interesting, Joe. By the way, did you know what the man paid for the flag?
I really don't know.
440,000 euros.
Oh, you know the story then.
Yeah, I do know the story. And
oh, but did you hear the speech?
I missed it. I will find it. I will listen to it.
That's a speech that no American even gave like this man did, an appreciation of the sacrifice that all these soldiers made and what America stands for,
yes,
and the freedoms that are in Europe and everybody that's blessed this country, their freedoms are from that flag.
Yes.
But I want you to get that speech. Anyway, I don't want to hold you up.
Thank you,
I'll talk to you.
We'll see you later. Bye-bye. By the way, this gentleman, so he bought the flag, he found the flag, and he bought it from somebody for 440,000 euros, which is about $475,000, almost $500,000. And he said that the flag belonged to go back to the United States, where he said that's where it belongs, in a museum. And it literally, it is the first flag, or the original flag that was used to storm the beaches of Normandy during D-Day, and he was hoping, he had expressed that he was hoping that it was so important for the American president to come to this come to the Netherlands to pick it up himself, and to kind of show the respect for what it had meant and appreciation, etc., etc. So. But then it just didn't fit in President Trump's schedule. So he said when the prime minister is going to America, they requested that he would also come to the United States and bring the flag. And so there was a special ceremony. I know that part. And so now the flag is back in the United States, and it is impressive. I mean, the colors are fading, and there is rips, and there is it's shredded in certain sections, especially away from where the stars are. So more on the edge of the stripes. And but it is beautiful. It is an absolute beauty. Good morning, caller. Thanks for joining the program today. What's your name, please? How can we help you?
Jacobus, this is Linda. And
hi, Linda.
I have a question. Would you repeat the things that you should be taking for... I was trying to write, and my husband walked in the room and interrupted, and I was trying to write down the things that you said should be taking, you know, for high cholesterol.
Well, for the high cholesterol, as far as...
Well, I can't always forget, mix one up, but I have the lower.
You have the low HDL?
No, I have the bad, whatever the bad one is.
LDL.
LDL, yeah. But, so I have real high LDLs, and it's genetic in my family. I mean, my cholesterol is like over 300 and something, and I can't remember the ratio. I have it written down on a piece of paper.
Okay, let's first give you the ratios. So the HDL, if you're less than 45... you're in a danger zone.
Okay.
If you are above 60, you're safe.
Okay.
And if you can get over 85, that's great. You have a pretty good immune system and your heart is good.
Okay.
The LDL is not per se bad cholesterol. LDL is extremely important to the body because anytime the body is suffering from an injury, an infection, or inflammation, the three I's, injury, infection, inflammation, LDL production from the liver will go up. It's trying to help the body to heal.
Okay.
Less than 70 is great.
Okay.
70 to 90 is good. Above 100, it indicates you have either an injury or an infection or inflammation.
Okay.
That will come down naturally.
Okay.
Now, the important thing to know with LDL is that we do a test on the particle size. How big are the molecules of bad cholesterol, of LDL cholesterol? So you can either have small particles or large particles. Which one do you think are more dangerous for you?
I think you said the small ones when I was listening earlier.
Correct, because they get sticky and they crawl into all the little crevices and holes and imperfections that we have inside the blood vessels, arteries, or capillaries. So they build up and they are a problem. So finding out your particle size is important. Now, the other thing that they have discovered is something called APO, lipoprotein B. The B from boy. And when that protein that is made by the liver is on the surface of LDL cholesterol and it is elevated above anything that's normal, so we all have it, but if it is elevated, you increase your risk for cardiovascular problems very much, like 60%. And then depending on the rest of your health, that could go up as high as 160%. Now, you say that your cholesterol, and then the triglycerides. Triglycerides is the amount of sugar that is not accepted by the blood cells, but it is stored in your fat cells that float in the bloodstream. The triglycerides less than 70 is great. 70 to 80 is good. And if you get over 85, you are increasing your risk for hypoglycemia and or diabetes too.
Okay.
So those are important to know. So triglycerides, the level that the doctor gives you are ridiculous. They're like 30 to 200, which is pathetic. So a lot of people are running around in as diabetics or hypoglycemia, and they don't even know they have a problem, but they all suffer from consequences and symptoms that are not normal. So what can we do to lower it? Well, there are different ways to lower it. If you're talking about HDL? Well, we increase HDL with resistance exercises. Resistance, not just treadmill or running. Resistance exercises, using weights, using resistance from the body. Push-ups, sit-ups, squats, leg presses, you know, things of that nature. Use your muscles. So that is important. The other one that brings it up is something called niacin or B3. Now, niacin for many people is not pleasant because it actually can give you a flush, but it will help to bring your HDL up. Another one, it will be omega-3 fish oil, and I would look into a tablespoon or so a day. Garlic is very good for cholesterol to help regulate it. But what I would say, Linda, is that you need to find out what your numbers are. And there are a lot of people who have what is called familial hypercholesterolemia, which is what you're talking about. It is genetic. So familial means it runs in the family. Hyper is high, and cholesterolemia is your cholesterol. So runs in the family. But many people with familial hypercholesterolemia are extremely healthy. They live a long life. They don't have cancer. They don't have heart disease. They don't really get many infections. If they do have a wound, they heal up within days, but other people may take weeks to heal. They have a pretty good immune system. So cholesterol is not a good indicator. And 30 years ago, if you had a cholesterol of 300, everything was kosher. When they did a test on people between 300 and 600 cholesterol, they found out that these people were actually very healthy, especially when their HDL was in a good shape. So by putting these people on statin drugs, they actually dropped them down from about 400 to 225. These people started developing cancer and heart disease, as well as more infections, and they were tired. They didn't feel good. So there is a lot to say about the about cholesterol. So fish oil, very important. Garlic is very important to lower the apolipoprotein B. There is a remedy called indole-3-carbinol, I3C, and that can lower it as low as 56%. So I got to run. There's a break coming up. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Linda. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, stay put. We will be right back.